Joining me, one of my absolute favourite correspondents, Chris Russell. Good afternoon.
G'day, Ro. How are you?
Very well, thank you. And it's poignant that we're chatting to you. You usually join us on the country on a Thursday, but of course tomorrow is Anzac Day, and who better to commemorate the day with than our Australian correspondent?
Well, it is very much a tradition. It's almost a sacred day here. I think even more sacred than Australia Day, to be honest, Ro. And we will all be out at the dawn services. They get literally tens of thousands of people turn up at 5:30 in the morning to go to those. It's a very special day.
So you're doing it a lot tougher than we are here in Dunedin, Chris. And this is something that I didn't realise until I moved south from the North Island. Our service doesn't start until 6:30 tomorrow morning here in Queen's Gardens. Here in Dunedin, because it doesn't get light until so much later in the day.
I'll be going to our Hornsby dawn service, which is our local one here, leaving here at 4:30. It starts at 5 and it's all over by 6. They have a gunner's breakfast at the local RSL, free breakfast for, well, free gold coin donation for breakfast put on by the RSL club. It's an amazing event. The whole town is shut down. You wouldn't believe you'd get 4,000 people in a little town of Hornsby, you know, at that hour of the morning. And I would say 25% of them would be under the age of 20.
Which is fantastic. Long will the traditions continue. I was fortunate enough one year to attend an Anzac service in Australia as an 8-year-old up in the Sunshine Coast there in Woombye, just outside of Nambour. And just, it was beautiful.
Yes, well, it is a very... I've been all over the country. And, you know, one of the most moving ones was during COVID.
Yes.
When we weren't allowed out of our houses, and they encouraged everyone to do their own in their own street. Now, we live in a little quiet cul-de-sac right at the end of a dead-end road near a national park. Every single one of our neighbours came into that street, stood in their driveways. We had a bugler who played the bugle. I got one of the young students to read the ode and to speak briefly. And everybody did it from a distance of, well, all the yards were separated by probably 50 metres between each one. And you know, after that, there was quite a few of them said, look, why can't we carry on doing that? But I guess at the end, we all wanted to support our local towns for their dawn services as well, right?
Absolutely. You had your bugler here in Dunedin. We had someone playing bagpipes up on the hill, which was just amazing.
Awesome.
You've got some wonderful rural Anzac stories for us. Tell me about the McAfee Institute.
So Sam McAfee was a guy who came out to Australia from Northern Ireland in the 1860s. He was an enormous landholder. He ended up at one stage, I think, owning 3 million acres and 1 million sheep. And he died in 1919, and he sold it all up and put all of that money into developing Australia and Australians. But one of his brothers actually purchased a separate property called Old Corey down near Geraldton in Victoria. And they set up they bought a farm there, which they set up, a couple of thousand hectares that they've still got there. And they set it up in memory of his son and his cousin, Michael and David McPherson, who both died in the war. Now, Michael McAfee was up in New Guinea fighting the Japanese across in the Shaggy Ridge, as they call it, up in the ranges of New Guinea. He was a very brave man who tried to capture the top of the ridge because it overlooked the airfield down in the Aramu Valley. The Japanese were firing shells up into the trees where they couldn't see the men, but they could see the trees, bursting them over the top, and then the shrapnel was killing the men underneath. So they decided to chop all the trees down, and men went and did that. And two of them got injured. And when they got injured, McAfee called for volunteers, but there weren't any to go and retrieve them. So he went instead, and he took a shell right to his chest as when he got up to the top of that ridge. So a very brave man, and would have, of course, inherited that whole Old Corrie farm. And his cousin was flying a bomber out of Darwin on a long-range mission. Sadly, had an engine failure in this Mitchell bomber, and it crashed, and he also got killed. So Michael's uncle, Sir Roy McAfee, decided to set up the farm as an institute, a memorial institute known as the McAfee Memorial Institute. And they set that up down there. It still exists today. They put a trust in place to provide the money. And it's been dedicated recently to research into rice. And out of that has spawned the Trukai Institute up in Papua New Guinea, where they're trying to grow rice to solve some of the malnutrition in the jungles of New Guinea. And so they've come full circle now, where this Trukai Institute brings young ag scientists from Papua New Guinea in. They do their trials on genotypes suited to New Guinea and actually re-helps New Guinea. And I'm sure that young Lieutenant Michael McCaffey would be very proud that it's gone full circle and his legacy is helping the Papua New Guineans again, Ro.
Absolutely, Chris. What a wonderful story. We'll just finish on what is your family connection to the war? I know most families around the country have multiple connections. You've got a couple as well.
Well, I've got one that I'm particularly interested in, and that's Lieutenant Geoffrey Keppen Henderson. Now, he was a farmer and grazier from Tintinara in South Australia, the brother of my grandmother. He went off the war just as a farmer and grazier, 22-year-old, headed off the war. And yet he was ended up being one of only five Australians to win both the military medal as a private soldier and then the military cross as a young lieutenant. He won the military medal, throwing bombs thrown into the trenches in the Battle of the Somme by the Germans. Being good at cricket, he caught them and threw them back again. And a very brave man, he got the military medal for that. He was then promoted in the field to lieutenant, and he won his military cross crawling across the no man's land, particularly at the Battle of Dharancourt, underneath the bodies of his comrades and listening into the orders groups of the Germans because he spoke fluent German.
Wow.
And then crawling back and telling all the British commanders what Germans were going to do the next year. And he's largely credited for winning that battle. Because they always were one step ahead of the Germans and described by the general who recommended him as one of the bravest men he ever met. And yet, coming back to Australia, he just went back to his farm, hitched up his horses, and he was away again in his farming life. I wish I'd known him better. He died when I was 11, but he was obviously a remarkable person and typical of that sort of non-assuming, laconic Australian who just headed to go off to war to support their mates in the defence of the British Empire.
Absolutely. Right. And then just back on the farm when he was back. What was your mother's connection to the war?
So my mother, she was in the RAF as a WAF, and of course they didn't go to war in those days, but her job was with Lancaster squadrons, including the Dambuster squadron, 617. She was a flight sergeant, and her job was to see all of the crew that got on the aircraft, record that, and then the aircraft that came back recording the ones that went off, and then going to her commander and saying, well, you've got another 20 letters to write for the 3 out of 4 that didn't come back from some of those bombing raids. So it really had a dramatic effect on her. I must say, there were things I learned about my mother when I was in my 50s that I never knew. The fact that she'd been married to one of those bombers very briefly before he died, and bomb aimers and all sorts of things that she never talked about. I'm sure it had a massive effect on her life, Ro, as it did on so many people.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it is important to go into that family history, to know those stories, to pass them on through the generations. Because, yeah, as you say, sometimes they weren't talked about, but it's so important if you can actually try and preserve those memories. Chris Russell, our Australian correspondent, been wonderful to reminisce over some amazing Anzac stories with you today. It's a poignant day, but enjoy Anzac service tomorrow.
It'll be a very special day, Ro, and I hope all of you in New Zealand just have a moment to reflect on all those who have really given us the opportunity to live the wonderful life we live out here.
Yeah, well said, Chris Russell, well said.